So I just wanted to once again help us to remember that we're talking about the history and geography of the Bible story. So once again, I want us to remember that we're right here. There we are, right there. And you saw us zoom in and how we got there. So now if we want to head over toward the Bible lands, we just launch off into space and come over here to the other side of the world, find our Bible lands. And of course, I've got borders and labels turned on, so it's showing our current conditions or situation. And of course, we're most concerned at this time about this area right here, which is what? All right. So Canaan, later became known as the land of Israel. But what other names did we? Pardon? Palestine was the Roman name for it. Wasn't called that, I don't think. Well, until after Jesus' time, at least, I think. What was it? Something Palestina. And I forget what the first was. It? Huh? Oh, okay. Anyway. So that's where that got that name from. Of course, it was the promised land, was it not? The land that flowed with milk and honey. So what do we have? What's this right here? Sea of Galilee. And down here we've got what? The Dead Sea. And this little body of water out here? The Mediterranean. Or the eastern arm of the Atlantic Ocean, or something like that. But anyway, that's the Mediterranean. Okay, so this pretty much takes into account the entire nominally settled portion of that we saw in the book of Joshua, or that we see in the book of Joshua, I should say, and that map that we have there on page 71 shows, you know, pretty much that. We're not getting as much detail as is on this map, of course, as far as rivers and stuff goes, because we're too high into space. We're at an altitude of 185 miles here, and so we're not seeing as much. And of course, even though this map is essentially at 185 miles, but they've drawn things in for us so that we can see them a little more clearly. But of course, you realize that when we look at it through the atmosphere and such like as that, it sort of melds things all together. So anyway, I just wanted us to remember where we are and where we are in relationship essentially to the rest of the world. So, you know, you look at this, and this is the place we've been looking at is right here. You can just barely see the Dead Sea by the time we get out here to 5,400 miles out in space. And so, you know, just compare that to the area of Spain and Portugal here, and just see how much the size of that is compares to some of the other nations that are about them. And of course, the current nation of Saudi Arabia takes up most of this area here, and so it's much huger than Israel. So, but it's just amazing to me every time that I look at this to think about how much history happened in so small a place, and how the fact that salvation came out of this little hunk of land right here, that was it. And so as we look at these things and think about that, we want to look at the magnitude. Really, when you think about this, you think about what Paul mentioned about is it Paul? A little leaven leavens the whole lump. That's in the book of I just lost that one now. First Corinthians, yeah. So it was Paul. So where Paul says that a little leaven leavens the whole lump. And so when we think about the the area of Israel where Jesus came from, we realize that this little piece has, as it were, leavened the whole lump of the world. Also, it reminds me of the parable that Jesus told about the mustard seed. Even though he says it's the smallest of seeds, yet it grows into a great plant, which the birds live and all of that sort of thing. So that's, I just like to, a lot of times, keep reminding myself about the fact that there was a lot of power coming out of God's plan for man, out of a very small place. Chris. Change the world. That's right. Yeah. Okay. So as we start looking at things now, I wanted to go back again first and just go over again a couple of the verses that we had looked at last week and discussed fairly extensively. And we look at Joshua, the 21st chapter, in verses 43 to the end, and has Randy's favorite verse in there, "There failed not aught of any good thing which Jehovah had spoken unto the house of Israel, all came to pass." So if I stay here at 43 and go over here and go to the New American Update and come back here. So it says, "Not one of the good promises which the Lord had made to the house of Israel failed, all came to pass." It's important that we remember that, because we are challenged by that, by the denominational world, on a frequent basis. They're looking for a millennium to come. In other words, a 1,000-year reign of Jesus, of Jesus the Christ here on this earth in physical Jerusalem, where the temple will be rebuilt and the Jews will be restored to their homeland. God has already told us way back in Joshua. That's only the which number book of the Bible? Just the sixth book of the Bible. And by the time we get to the end of that, God has told them that they've gotten everything that's been promised. And then, of course, we continue on down to, 23 and 14. And it's just, whoops. Oh, I'm in that New American Standard. I can't see where I am. 23 and 14. And this is where, of course, Joshua once again is talking about he's going the way of all the earth. And this is where we talk about the good things and the what will happen if there's transgressions. And but when he says, "And behold, this day I'm going the way of all the earth, and you know in your hearts and in all your souls that not one thing hath failed of all the good things which Jehovah your God spake concerning you. All are come to pass unto you. Not one thing hath failed thereof." And then he gives them the blessing and the warning. "And it shall come to pass that if all the good things are come upon you of which Jehovah your God spake unto you, so will Jehovah bring unto you all the evil things until he have destroyed you from off this good land which Jehovah your God hath given you, when you transgress the covenant of Jehovah your God which he commanded you, and go and serve other gods and bow down yourselves to them. Then will the anger of Jehovah be kindled against you, and ye shall perish quickly from off the good land which he hath given unto you." Now, we get into Joshua chapter 24. What verses is it that we know most? Verses that we know most readily. 15. What does 15 say? Lynn, do you feel like reading 14 to 15 for us? All right. "But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." How many of us have that posted up in our house somewhere? That's a very popular thing that you can buy at the stores to to put up in your house, for me and my house. We shall serve the Lord. On the way to putting your hand up at all? Yeah. Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. There we go. Right. I was going to say, what group of people in the New Testament do we see? We see the church in Laodicea that was what? Lukewarm. So they were. But I don't know if I have it on this computer or not. I saw it on my directory here earlier, but I don't remember what it was. But it was a cartoon, as it were, that I saw, just a two panel cartoon, and it's two boys, essentially older teenagers, talking to one another, and here's this white picket fence along here, and they're both on this side of it, and the white picket fence is labeled God's Commandments. And the one boy is saying to the other boy, I am just tired of all of these rules and regulations that God has laid upon me. I'm just going to jump over the fence. And so he grabs the fence and jumps over, while his friend is saying, wait, it's not a fence, it's a guardrail. And the next one we see a cliff. So he's jumped over the fence and off the cliff. That's exactly what goes on. There's no fence riding. You're on one side or the other. Obviously, this kid wasn't trying to ride the fence. It was a nice picket fence, would be difficult to walk on. So that's the other one. And what is the story that Mickey told the other day again for the dozenth time or whatever? It says people were standing out in the field, and this man was standing on the wall, and there was a group of people on one side and a group of people on the other side, and the group of people on the far side of the wall, were trying to get this guy to come over to their side. He says, I don't know, I just like being standing here on the fence, you know. I just like walking on top of the wall. And it's labeled God's Commandments also. And so at the end of time, end of the days of this world, and they come and they take the people away on the other side of the fence to go to heaven. And then Satan comes along and takes the people on the other side of the fence to go to hell. And he comes back and talks to the person on the wall and says, well, you need to come with me also. He says, well, why? I'm just on the wall. Satan says, I own the wall. And that's true. If we're fence sitters or we're wall walkers trying to do the minimum amount possible, then we're already in Satan's clutches, as it were. We're already in the place where we don't want to be. We don't want to be minimal people. We don't want to be fence sitters or wall walkers or whatever we want a cartoonish thing we want to talk about. We want to be the people that serve Jehovah. Now, Mickey pointed out to me that we also need to continue past verse 15, of course. And what did the people say? Randy, what did they say in verse 16 and whatever? Go ahead through 18, actually.
The Lord our God is he who brought us and our fathers out of the land of Egypt in the house of bondage, to do these great signs in our sight to preserve us through all the way in which we went among all the peoples through which we passed. The Lord drove out from before us all the peoples through the Amorites who lived in the land. We will also serve the Lord. He will
Okay. All right. So notice that the people make quite a promise here in verses 16 through 18. It appears that once we get into verse 19 here, that Joshua has his doubts as to whether they'll keep this thing. And once we start getting into the book of Judges, then we'll see that it doesn't take very long after we get into the book of Judges that what happens. They forgot about it. Every single generation. Randy? Yeah. 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 It's when. Right.
He didn't say, if you turn away from God, you're going to punish him.
Mm-hmm.
When you turn away from God.
Right. Right. Yeah. Well, what did the writer of the book of Hebrews, what was he saying in context with this? That they had willingly turned away from the promised land to seek after other things. And he was admonishing the people to whom he was writing not to do the same thing. Don't turn away from the promise. So we see that this talked about a lot. And I think all of this, of course, obviously, is for our admonition, for the admonition of everybody, actually, that we need to understand that it's unfortunate that so many people think that all you have to do is be happy and a nice guy, and that's good enough. God never said that. He never made that point. He says, I don't want you to just be happy and a nice guy. I want you to follow my commandments. And if you transgress my commandments, then these things are going to happen to you. And we see that it happened to chosen people. It'll happen to us. Bruce? Yeah, it's I just lost it too. Part of the tulip thing. Pardon? Your ticket's punched? Yeah. 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 The P, it's a perseverance of the saints. Yeah. So, right. Okay. So, that kind of finishes the book of Joshua. It shows here at the last chapter that he called all the tribes together of Israel to Shechem. And that was, what did Shechem end up being for a while? Sort of, well, no, at this particular time and soon on into the future, it essentially sort of became the capital of Israel, and it's where the tabernacle was set up. So for a long time, Shechem was the center of worship for the people. That if they were going to go to the tabernacle, they went to Shechem. And so we see Shechem spoken about a lot. And it's really not until the time of David that we see any movement toward Jerusalem itself. Chris? Well, it lasted in them for a good long time, that's for sure. I think if God could... Yeah, yeah, right. And it wasn't till who was king that the temple got built. Yeah, the king after David. Because David wanted to build the temple, and God told him, no. you're a man of war, your son will build this. And so Solomon built the temple that we call, of all things, Solomon's temple, because there were a number of temples built to replace ones that became destroyed and such alike as that. So I forget whether anybody's given some sort of official name to the temple that was built after Babylonian captivity. But what did the elders that saw the second temple built, what was their impression of it as in comparison to the original temple? They were disappointed, and they did what? They wept. Yeah. So I find that semi-interesting in that they wept at this, yet the people had been brought back to the promised land. And so the thing is that Israel was in a captive state, as it were, from that time on. For the rest of the time that we read about Israel, they are in a, well, let's not say captive, let's say an occupied state. Okay? So the Babylonians, Cyrus, right, let them go. But were they no longer under Babylonian rule? No. They were still ruled by the Babylonians. Later on, they were ruled by the Hasmoneans and all this. They never had people that were not their captors, were not their occupiers, up until essentially the end of the Jewish nation, to speak of at all, which would have been right around 70 AD when the temple was destroyed. The Jews were dispersed, and once the temple is destroyed, they had no place to worship, and they were required to have a place to worship. There's one thing that in discussion with some people, they talk about, well, I just don't like organized religion. The interesting thing to note is that when you look at God's religion from Genesis 1 to the end of the book of Revelation, what is it? It is quite organized. The chosen people of God are given direction as to what to do throughout the entire Bible. There's never been this, well, I just have my God in my heart, my father, who was an atheist and raised us that way, said, well, my God is in my heart. The problem with that is that, yeah, well, that's your God, unfortunately. Jehovah lives in heaven. Jehovah, your God, does not live just in your heart. And if that's the only place that you have him, and the only thing that you know about him, then he's not the God of the Bible. So, yeah, Joey. Yes, right, yeah.
Or their only experience with it is a man-made organization, which having experienced that for many years falls down all over the place.
Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah, when we start writing our own books to dictate how we are going to handle God's religion, then we've missed the book that's already been written. It's all there. It tells us what we need to do, talks to us about, the way our lives ought to be. Yeah, well, finish the verse. It's a ways of death. That's, yeah. Right. And, it's not like, as Mia says, she uses the term, or I guess Jenny has used the term to her, you know, when Mia gets mean to her in a fun way. She calls her a big meanie, you know. It's not like God is a big meanie, you know, trying to beat up on us and things like that. He's trying to show us the way to live. And he's trying to give us that home that he knows we really would like to have. If only we'd look at the words that he's written to us. I mean, it's just incredible that people would claim to be people that believe in God and not read and understand and believe these words. Joey?
Mm-hmm. In fact, there was even a TV show, I think, in the 50s or 60s called Father Knows Best.
Right.
And so if we understand that within a physical family unit, if we understand that principle of Father Knows Best, that, you know, he has the experience and the wisdom, et cetera, well, why can't we, you know, just deeply understand the spiritual realm, but our Heavenly Father knows best, and we should trust his wisdom when he gives us scriptural mandates or laws, if you will, saying, do this, don't do that. We should understand.
Yeah. Right. How can you call me Father and do not the commandments? Yes?
I know someone recently who has a book called The Story, written by a Mexican on the middle author. What it does is it takes the Bible, takes out all the repetition, puts it together like a sport. And you're sure leaving out a lot of the information that you need to have.
That's right. You know, when you do your daily Bible reading, you know, you get through and, oh, well, I just hit the book of Revelation. I guess it's time for me to go back to Genesis, or depending on how you do it, you know. Or I just hit the book of Malachi, and I'm done with that, and I'm going to go back to Genesis. And then you start reading the what we call the Pentateuch, meaning the five books of the law. And you read through Genesis. That's pretty good and exciting. And so is Exodus also. But then when you get to Leviticus and Deuteronomy, it's like, and then the... Then this many cubits away from the, and then that many, and you go. You know, but the thing is, God wrote it. I ought to read it. There's something there for me. Even though reading through Leviticus and Deuteronomy may be somewhat tedious, we need to understand that God gave them direction for the organization of their religion right there. And we need to understand that it wasn't just, well, you know, kind of do things this way if you want to, and then do it that way over here if you feel like it. He told them exactly what he wanted, down to the, you know, cubit or whatever, you know. And he told Noah to build the ark out of what? Gopher wood, not balsa or plywood or whatever. You know, it's build it out of gopher wood. If Noah, and we don't, I mean, if Noah hadn't built it out of gopher wood, whatever that is, then it wouldn't have worked. So, God's very orderly person. And he expects us to follow the order that he's set down. It's not wrong to call him a person, is it? Yes. Well, yeah, I mean, there's a certain order to everything. We could go back out to Google Earth again and turn around and just look at the stars. Anyway. So, all right. So Joshua is telling him, he says, "Thus saith Jehovah," and he's talking about them. "I brought your fathers out of Egypt. When they cried out, he put darkness between you, and I brought you into the land of the Amorites," etc. "I sent the hornet before you, which drove them out before you. I gave you a land whereon thou hadst not labored, and cities which ye built not. And ye dwell therein, of vineyards and olive yards which ye planted not, do ye eat. Now therefore fear Jehovah and serve him in sincerity." And so after the people had made these promises, then Joshua in verse 22 here says, "Your witnesses against yourselves, that you have chosen you Jehovah to serve him." And they said, "We are witnesses." So then they buried him. Well, he died first. But anyway, so this was right at the end of his life. So, and you note right at the end here, they follow the wishes of Joseph, who had died down in Egypt. And the bones of Joseph, which the children of Israel brought up out of Egypt, buried they in Shechem, in the parcel of ground which Jacob bought of the sons of Hamor, the father of Shechem, for 100 pieces of money, and they became the inheritance of the children of Joseph. And then Eliezer died, and we're into the book of Judges. So what I'd like to do is, for the, what is it, about 15 minutes that we have left, is to just go over the review of the book of Joshua that we have there in lesson 18. I'll do this and see if my computer locks up on me again. A review of the book of Joshua. So, once again, like I say, we're in lesson 18, so we're looking at the lessons that we've learned from the book of Joshua. So, we want to... Where are we on page 63, is it? No, 73. All right, so unless you fill this out, this is going to be tough to do. But so name the Canaanite tribes who lived in the land of Canaan. Of course, we can look at Deuteronomy, the 7th chapter in verse 1, and we can see a listing of them. But who's got some of them or all of them? Lynn, you've got all of them, don't you? You want to name them off? Okay, so let me go back one here. So we had the Hittites, apparently up toward the north there, and then the Girgashites, and then the Amorites, and then the Canaanites, who were sort of a general type of people. I mean, there were a number of different sort of tribes amongst them, as it were. And then, of course, the Perizzites, who lived approximately the same area, but a little further north. And then the Hivites is more appropriate. And then the Jebusites, who live down here in the central region. Of course, we look at the top of the Dead Sea right here. So Jericho is right about here, and Jerusalem's pretty much just straight across on the top of the mountain from it. So that's what we got. Okay, the next question then, name Jacob's son. Name Jacob's sons. So, how many are we looking for? I got 12 on here too. Okay, yes. So, let's look at those. Took a little bit longer than I'd prefer for it to do. But anyway, so here we got 12 sons. Are we leaving anybody out here? All right. Now, whose progeny, as it were, ended up getting the double portion? All right, Joseph. So, what was the story behind all that? Who were the people to whom the land was divided up that were from Joseph? Okay, and the sons' names? Pardon? Ephraim and Manasseh. Okay. All right. Name the tribes of Israel, it says now. That's the next question. And so here's where we get that breakup, you see. And the thing is that in this, if you look at naming the tribes of Israel, I think what the authors here are... Whoa. Okay, so Reuben just sort of merged in, and then Simeon and everybody else came along right away. The thing is that who's missing here as far as the tribe goes? Yeah, Joseph and Levi. Right. So here's Joseph right here, right? Ephraim and Manasseh. So Ephraim and Manasseh, Manasseh, why are they on both sides of the river? Yeah, they were cattle people, but apparently not all of them were cattle people, I guess. So some of them decided to stay over here on this side. But actually, when we look at it all together, they're probably one of the biggest allotments, Judah, of course, being the largest one. But so these two then, Manasseh and Ephraim, those make up the double portion of Joseph. And as you say, the other one that's missing is here is Levi. Why is that? Right, God was their portion. Right, right. So they ended up getting cities to live in, and as I hypothesize, I'm not sure whether I found anything absolutely crystal clear, but that they were given cities to live in, and I think they were given cities to live in with the other people that were living there already. In other words, the other Israelite people that were living there already. Okay. And then also, what were the Levites given after they had been given cities, 48 cities to settle in? What other six things did they? The cities of refuge, right. So Hebron, Shechem, so there's Shechem again, and Kadesh. So those are all on the west side of the river. And then after they had properly settled the east side of the river, then they set up Golan, Ramoth-Gilead, and Bezer. Those were cities of refuge on the east side of the river. Joey?
I know, like you said, that Levi didn't get their own territory like the other groups here. They got the city.
That
isn't technically correct because they were not a tribe. I hear people all the time about the tribe of Levi.
Yeah.
I mean, they were a tribe, so it is.
They didn't get an allotment of or they certainly didn't get borders, that's for sure. Certainly they were, yeah. And I think really what they mean to say here is name the tribes of Israel that got land, allotments. Yeah, yeah. Chris? They crossed back and forth all the time. And there was a certain amount of intermarriage, but it appears that when you look at things, that I don't know whether there was tribal rivalry or what, but they did seem to stay within their own tribe a lot in marriages. But we do see that there were marriages between different tribes. Now, if we look at... just lost their names. The parents of John the Baptist. Zacharias, is it? And Elizabeth and Zacharias, they were both generically from the tribe of what? Levi. But it says that Elizabeth was a descendant of Aaron. Okay. So it was... If I remember right, it was only those who were of the direct descendants of Aaron that could become high priest. Yes, Jenny?
But
they appear to have been cousins or something, or niece and nephew, aunt and niece, or something like that. There had to be, yes. Yeah. So, yeah, she was, where do we see her lineage as far as where she came from? Is it Matthew's genealogy? One of them isn't the genealogy of Mary, sort of, through Mary, and the other one's the genealogy through Joseph? I forget. Becomes some carrying away, and so all the generations, and yeah, Joseph, the husband of Mary, the husband begat Joseph, the husband of Mary. So anyway, where'd they go to check in due to the king's commandment? They went down here to the city of Bethlehem, right? Because that's where Joseph was from, and that's right here, just 5 miles south of Jerusalem. So that's in the territory of Judah, because it says specifically that Joseph was of the heritage, or whatever you call it, of Bethlehem. But then where was Nazareth? Way up here somewhere. I don't know that it's even on here, but it was right up here by the Sea of Galilee. I don't think it was any further up. Anyway, and so there was a certain amount of intermarriage between the tribes. But what was there not to be intermarriage between? The nations, right. You shall not give your sons to their daughters, and you not shall not take their daughters to your sons. So God was pretty explicit about that. And they went and did it anyway, and that was one of their downfalls also. They had that big trouble when it came up to Balaam and Balak, you know. So we see that that Balaam led them off into idolatry by encouraging them to intermarry with the local tribes. So, do you ever think about when Balaam's donkey talks to him? What's he do? He just talks back. Yeah, I mean, what are you talking? And then the donkey talks to him, and then it's done. I mean, you go, okay. You know, a donkey does talk to you. Do you realize that? Well, it's my donkey's been around for a long time. He talks to me all the time. No. So, anyway. All right. So, their next question then is what's the difference between the two lists? And then, actually, all they've done is just line them up. So, we see on the original list that they had Levi. And once again, you know, your point is well taken. They are a tribe of Israel. They just were not allotted any land with borders, as it were. Why does he have these now out of order? But anyway, so then we have Ephraim and Manasseh, but here we used to have Joseph. Okay, so Joseph got a double portion. Seems like it got awfully dim up here real quick. All right, Levi and Joseph, Ephraim and Manasseh. Okay. All right, okay, so then we've already discussed this. Why was Levi not given a specific territory? The tribe was selected for special ministers. They were given 48 cities. Six of the 48 cities were cities of refuge, and we already talked about those already. We spoke of the cities of refuge already. Hebron down here in the south, and Shechem in the middle, and Kadesh up at the top on the western side, and then Golan and Ramoth-Gilead and Bezer here on the eastern side. These three were set up first, and then these three came later after they had finished settling that area of the land. All right, why doesn't Joseph's name appear on the map of any of the tribes? And we already discussed that, because the land was given to Manasseh and Ephraim. Why did he not receive? Reuben was Jacob's oldest son. Why didn't he receive the double portion? He what?
He was a bad boy.
Yes. Anyway, so Reuben was just not a very good guy. How did the Gibeonites trick the Israelites into making a treaty with them? Randy? Yeah. They dressed the part too, didn't they? Yeah, old clothes, moldy bread. Holes in our shoes. Look at this. Yeah. Yeah. Can't we all just get along? So. From a far country. So, you know, they were the people of Israel were nominally camped out at Gilgal, and these Gibeonites were just over here. They'd already been to Jericho, the people of Israel already been to Jericho and kind of looked around there for a while. Then they went to Ai. And so they're just down the road from Gibeon. And the Gibeonites came. What was Israel's problem with them doing this as far as their relationship with God was concerned. God told them to destroy him. And in the book it says they should have done what? They should have asked him first. You know, take it to God first, as it were, not second. Yep, that's right. Now, in my personal opinion, and of course, you know, God's the one that calls the shots here, but in my personal opinion, these people established a false covenant with the Israelites. They lied and yet got a covenant. And Israel gave them a covenant because of what they said. And so, why was Israel punished by this? It's because they didn't ask God. So, once again, it was man's will, not God's will, that was upper on their minds here. Okay. In what order were the sections of land taken? As we look at that, we can see that they got the place right around where they crossed the river first, of course. Jericho being right here, and that's where they crossed over, right at Gilgal and Jericho. And then they conquered the southern lands. And then they went way up yonder in the north and conquered those areas up there. And they left undone just a bit of stuff. Now, these folks over here did a fairly good job, but I think the people of Israel had done a fairly good job on them before they even crossed the river. I think there were a number of mentions of the Edomites and the Moabites and such alike as that, getting the worst, or and the people that were here in this area getting the worst of the deal as the Israelites moved through preparing to cross the river. Okay. Well, that's all the time we got. So let's go ahead and complete your questions on chapter 18. Starting with that next question, why was Moses distressed when the tribes of Reuben and Gad asked for their inheritance? Okay, so we'll take it up with that question. Whatever, is there a question number? I don't have the numbers here. Pardon? 9? Made it through 8 whole questions, huh? Wow. Not bad at all. Okay, thank you.